Hello and welcome to Sports Report Podcast, episode 38. I'm Billy, and today we got a lot of good stuff to talk about. The NFL minicamp got done about 2 weeks ago. We're heading into training camp at the start of August. Still some deals going down there. In the college worlds, college football, college basketball, all that stuff, even like any sport, basically, in college, players can now get paid through the name, imaging, and licensing deal that should have been done since the start of the NCAA, to be honest. The NBA is finally almost coming to an end, sadly. The NBA Finals is expected to begin very soon now with the conclusion of the Eastern and Western Conference Finals, the Bucks and the Suns going to clash in that one. We also have some of the soccer things coming in this week with the Euros going on. And the MLB currently right now, pretty entertaining stuff the MLB is doing right now, but a little bit of controversy, as usual, from them. So let's just get right into that stuff. Also, a quick note, this is not the start of season three. We are delaying season three for after this episode. So this is just kind of we were expecting to do season three, the start of season three right here, but we made some different plans, and we're going to start season three with all Hunter and Aiden here. They're not here as of right now, so season three will be next episode, most likely, and which will not be next week. It'll be most likely the week after that. So a little bit of inconsistency still there, but we'll mend it. We'll mend it. It will be there. Season three is going to be pretty fun for us and for you guys, the listeners and the people watching on YouTube. It's going to be fun for you guys. We're looking to do a little bit more visual aspects, not just audio. We want to do a little bit more on social media and everything. We're doing a little bit of a rebrand, which you guys will see eventually. As you know, season one to season two, we changed our logo a little bit. This one's going to be much more drastic. Social media handles will change. Logos will change. Layouts will change. A lot of that stuff. We're looking to have a little bit more of a free-flowing format and something that I think you guys will like a lot, hopefully. Right now, just because of all the season three coming stuff coming up, before we get into it, I just want to go over some stuff with you guys. The scouting board, which we haven't posted on in a bit, that's going to get going in a little bit. Hopefully, I can post some of that stuff in a few days or so. Not guaranteed, but definitely guaranteed the next 2 weeks of some more of that stuff will come out. I have most of that stuff planned out. Like, I have, since the beginning, I've had 25 or so episodes already planned out of that I know I'm going to do. It's just putting them through production and, you know, getting them done. So that stuff is all pretty much planned. So scouting board is not done. The scouting board is not done with two episodes. It will continue. It's just, we need to, you know, get some of that stuff concrete and done. Figure out some of this rebranding stuff we're going to do with the podcast, the main one. And Alejandro and Aiden will be back for season three. And hopefully we can announce that soon and put that out. But as for now, this is the last episode of season two. Enjoy it. We'll start out with the Zach Ertz news. So Zach Ertz, the tight end on the Philadelphia Eagles. Eagles going through a lot right now. Not necessarily the franchise in the best spot, but new beginnings with Sirianni coming in as the new head coach over there. Jalen Hurts presumably taking over as the starting quarterback. Joe Flacco also in that QB room. Nick Mullins. They set themselves up pretty well for a transitioning team, I think. If Hurts can't do well, they still got some guys that I guess you could, if you could say premier backups, those guys are like Nick Mullins and Joe Flacco. If that could ever be a thing. Anyways, Zach Ertz, he now reportedly wants badly out of Philadelphia. This has been all throughout the offseason. There's been reports over and over saying that Zach Ertz wants out. We know Zach Ertz wants out. You know, very good tight end. Last season didn't play a ton, and his stats suffered a little bit. Well, not a little bit. Statistically, it was his worst season ever. He's going into his age 30 season. He'll be 30, going to be 31. And, you know, he's been a great tight end and he could definitely be of good use somewhere else. The Bills have been a team that's been rumored for like ever. And they just haven't done anything with him. Dawson Knox is pretty good for the Bills. Good young tight end. But if you want to take the next leap, really, you know, Ertz could be a good spot there. The Steelers, maybe, with Eric Ebron pairing him. That could be another good move if they wanted to go somewhere with that. The Jaguars, who have Pharrell, who they just drafted, but they could totally go for a Zach Ertz to kind of be a solid target for Trevor Lawrence. But really, I think Ertz just wants out of Philadelphia because he doesn't want to go through this stage. You know, he's an older guy, a bigger contract that I think is kind of what's holding the Eagles up. Because I don't think teams really want to pay his contract. But there's certainly a market. I'm sure if you ask the Bills out there for like a sixth round pick, they'd take it. If I was the Eagles, I'd take that too. Because one, if I'm the Eagles, I want to free up cap space. And I just want to figure out the young guys and kind of propel them for the future. Because you're not really going to, certainly in the NFC East, they can like compete right now for the NFC East title, but they're not going to compete for a Super Bowl. You get what I mean? It's just the NFC East is so bad. I don't even think they're going to win the NFC East. I think the football team would probably win that. They're just better overall. They're like the only team in the division that looks good in my eyes. Like at all. On paper, the Cowboys always look good. They always underperform. So I'm not putting my eggs in that basket. Zach Ertz just wants out. It's best in the Eagles' interest to do that, and it's best in Ertz's interest, and probably in a team like the Bills, which I think would be a good team for him, and someone like the Steelers or the Jaguars or something like that I think could really work for Zach Ertz. Maybe someone like the Chargers, who just lost Hunter Henry. Because Justin Herbert, like, really, he has a lot of weapons, yes, with Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. But Henry is a big loss over there. Ertz could be a good kind of filler there, I suppose, for them. So that could be another good one. Now, if you look at Ertz's statistics this last season, he had 36 receptions for 335 yards and a touchdown. This is his worst season since his rookie year, which he had 36 receptions for 469 yards and 4 touchdowns. So a little bit of a decline for sure. The season before that, in comparison, he had 88 receptions for 916 yards and 6 touchdowns. In 2018, 3 seasons ago, he had 116 receptions, 1,163 yards, and 8 touchdowns. By far his best year. And something that's pointing to, you can, like, this guy can be a leading wide receiver, not wide receiver, but leading receiver, playing as a tight end on your team. Excuse me. He can be a leading wide receiver on your team. Why do I keep making that mistake? Anyways. Sure. Still, I think, on a roster that will treat him well. Sean McDermott knows how to manage his weapons up there in Buffalo. He's done a great job with Dawson Knox. He's did a great job with guys like John Brown, maximizing their potential. And I think, you know, with a guy like Josh Allen, I think Ertz could really work out pretty well. Pretty well over there. The 49ers, after losing Jordan Reed, also need kind of a second option behind George Kittle. I don't know if they want to put that much money into the position, but Ertz and Kittle would be pretty deadly as well. And Dallas could work too, but I don't see the Eagles and Dallas really trying, like, making that in a in-division deal. So we'll see what happens with Ertz. I think he still has a lot left in the tank. You know, he's only 30. But we'll certainly see what happens with him. Xavien Howard, the cornerback for the Miami Dolphins, who just signed a pretty big deal back in 2019, he's going to hold out of training camp for a contract extension. Now, this comes as a bit of a surprise because Howard just recently signed a 5-year, $75.25 million contract extension in 2019, which will give him an average of $15.05 million in a salary. It's the sixth highest annual salary in the NFL for corners. So pretty good for Xavien Howard overall. But sixth highest, and now we have corners like Shaquille Griffin going and getting bigger bags. And Xavien's kind of seeing that, and only a year or so into his contract, he's already wanting a new deal, and he's going to hold out for that. Which I frankly don't understand. Like, if you have a year left on your contract and you're way behind league average, which, like, Stephon Gilmore, I think you have the right to hold out for a new contract because, like, if all your guarantee money is washed up and all that stuff and you're just playing on, like, barely anything to the league average and you did really good for your team, like Xavien did. Excuse me. Then you should be entitled to, like, getting that cash or bargaining for it, at least. Xavien is making 15 a year. That's great for a corner. It's sixth highest at the time. Sixth highest. But even with more players getting bigger contracts, like, you're still sixth highest annual salary in the NFL for a corner. You signed that 2 years ago. That's pretty good. It's not like you're down in the depths of a, I don't know, like a Brian Poole. I don't know, some obscure corner. Right? You're not that far down. I don't understand where Howard's coming from, wanting the extension, holding out for it. You got 3 years left on your contract. Like, at least wait until you're outside the top 10. Maybe it's because he's outside the top 5 now he wants it. I don't know. It could be an ego thing. Not really sure. Just to tell you how Xavien's performed. This last season, he had 10 interceptions for the Dolphins, was one of the best corners in the NFL, if not the best. 2018, he had 7 interceptions. In 2017, he had 4. That was leading to his contract extension. So maybe this really good play is he's trying to use as a power move to get an extension with the Dolphins. But, I mean, if I was the Dolphins, I wouldn't be doing this because I think he doesn't really have a lot of ground to stand on. You got 3 years left on your contract. You're still one of the best, like, highest paid corners in the league. So there's really no reason why he should be holding out, but he is. Which is just confusing. So if I'm the Dolphins, I'm basically saying, like, screw you. You can hold out as long as you want. We know you're going to come crying back to us, because if he's losing game checks and all that, I don't think he's going to leave. I don't think he's going to hold out. He doesn't have the longevity that, like, an Aaron Rodgers could have with that, because Rodgers has been in the league forever. The money doesn't really matter for him anymore. Xavien Howard's still a pretty young guy. He's only been in the league since, like, 2016. So he can't really afford that to be losing all those checks. So in his best interest, it's probably best for him to stay. To stay the course for right now and wait to hold out some other time in the future. Ideally, last year contract, 2 years. Like a Stephon Gilmore. Be more like that. Stephon Gilmore won Defensive Player of the Year and was fine with it until, like, now. So I'd hold off, Xavien. I'd hold off. But he apparently doesn't want to. That could get him into some trouble, but the Dolphins are going to be fine without him for now. He'll come crawling back. There's no way that they give him an extension unless they love him so, so much that they're going to give him another, like, 4-year extension, make his contract 7 years or something crazy. Corners are starting to get, like, a really high value of themselves, which I don't, like, I don't not value the corner position, but corners are starting to get paid, like, 20. They're getting paid, like, high-level pass rushers who are also getting kind of very greedy with their money. You know, quarterbacks really are the only ones that I think should be making that much. But everybody else is starting to rise up and get pretty high salaries, and I think that's going to F up some teams eventually. It hasn't yet, but it's going to. Well, it kind of has. Seahawks' high salary has screwed them up a little bit. That's why they've never been able to get back in Super Bowl form, like I've said before. And speaking of that, Russell Wilson's reportedly really happy with the Seahawks, which I highly doubt at this point. Because Russell Wilson, as we know, this offseason there was all those rumors about how he was unhappy with the Seahawks and that he wanted to trade out of there and all that stuff. And, you know, I didn't really see places for Russell Wilson that were too better than Seattle, but I understand why he doesn't want to stay in Seattle, because the offensive line problems were pretty bad. They've adjusted a little bit, gotten Gabe Jackson and guys like that. They've given him some help. It's still not a lot. But, you know, he's struggling still a little bit with the O-line stuff, I'm sure. Personally, I think he's just masking it because he realizes he's going to be with Seattle this season. And, you know, he's a winner. He wants to win. So I think he's trying to mask it to the media, mask it to his teammates. But on the inside, I think really Wilson still wants out. I think the Seahawks have a realization that Wilson's probably going to leave eventually. You know, otherwise, we never would have seen the rumors like a couple years ago. That rumor that they tried to trade Wilson to the Browns and all that. And how this offseason Wilson wanted to trade. We never would have seen that. So I think that Wilson's not really happy with the Seattle Seahawks. I don't see the Seahawks being a amazing team this year, especially with the wretched secondary that they have right now. There's nothing back there without Shaquille Griffin, and there was nothing back there before. You know, Jamal Adams is back there, but how good is his coverage skills? We still don't know. You know, the holes on their defense. They're not even bringing back KJ Wright right now. So I fail to understand how Seattle's going to be a Super Bowl contender and a contender in the NFC West, the best division in football, when there's like no defense to stop anybody. Your O-line's trash still. Your run game is Chris Carson and nothing else, and Chris Carson's average at best, behind a bad offensive line. And then your really only positive spots are Bobby Wagner carrying your defense, trying to. Russell Wilson, who was inconsistent at the tail end of the season last year. And your young wide receivers, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and all those guys. So you guys have some work to do, certainly, to figure out this Russell Wilson stuff. I don't see them really going anywhere. I don't think Russell Wilson's happy in Seattle. I don't really think Pete Carroll's happy in Seattle. I don't think Seattle's been in a good spot. I don't think they've been in a good spot for the past couple of years. You saw the front office try to solve a little bit of that this year, but nothing so far. And, you know, we'll see what happens over there. We're going to take a quick little break and we'll be back on the other side. And we're back with some more NFL. So one more thing from the NFL. Speaking of the Seattle secondary that I was just talking about, Richard Sherman is reportedly open to a Seattle return, which I feel like comes across my screen like every 5 seconds. Richard Sherman, his signing rumors and all this stuff, his visits and whatever you want to say, has been reported on constantly, just everywhere, basically. The guy has been open to go. So why he hasn't signed yet, I don't know. Why hasn't Melvin Ingram signed yet, I don't know. It really doesn't make a lot of sense. But anyways, he's still in the free agency pool, just waiting for training camp, I guess. And he's open to Seattle return. Guys, just get it done at this point. Richard Sherman, you know, is aging. He's not as good as he once was, obviously. He's still a really good corner, good coverage guy. Something that Seattle needs, because can you name a cornerback on the Seattle secondary if you're not a Seattle fan? Absolutely not. You can't. Because the one everybody knew, the only good one, is currently gone, and that's Shaquille Griffin. And even, you know, if you look at Shaquille Griffin's stats, his coverage and his pass percentage rates, you know, his percentage of a reception rate and coverage, basically, is what I'm trying to say, wasn't that good for him. You know, he wasn't that good of a corner, not really number one. That's why I was confused. I knew why he got that much money in free agency, but he doesn't really deserve that number, I don't think, at all. You know, Xavien Howard, a much better corner than Shaquille Griffin. But nonetheless, Richard Sherman, I don't think, is going to get a lot in free agency, nor that he really shouldn't. But Seattle needs something in the secondary if they actually want to contend, which is what they seem to be looking at. So Richard Sherman returning to Seattle makes a lot of sense for both sides. Seattle might overpay a little bit for Sherman to get his services because they're so desperate at corner. And Sherman, I'm sure, is open to coming back to Seattle and playing with some of his old friends, although a lot of them, I'm sure, are gone. You know, the Legion of Boom was a while ago. But I'm sure he'll be happy to be back. I think that will end up happening. And, you know, we'll see what happens over there in Seattle. But still, I don't expect Seattle to do much this year, even with Richard Sherman. They could sign the rest of the free agency pool. I don't think they're going to do a lot. You know, you can call me a hater of the Seahawks, but, you know, I have nothing against the Seahawks. I just don't see them doing anything this year. So now on to pretty much the biggest thing to happen in college sports in a long, long while, and that's the NIL. The NIL was signed. Well, it was not signed, but it was pretty much approved and put in action on Thursday night heading into Friday. And the NIL basically said, hey, any player in college sports can use their name, imaging, and likeness for their own personal use, meaning basically they can profit off of themselves. Like any one of you and me, like any normal human being, you can sign an autograph and make money. You can make a YouTube channel and make money. You can put your name on a shirt and make money. What the NCAA used to do, as if you've ever followed this, is basically once you get into college, once you land a scholarship with the NCAA, you're playing on anything. You could be a D3 still. You're an athlete. Basically, you get your rights revoked and that you can't make any money off of yourself. If you decide to make a YouTube channel, for instance, the Destroying case, Donald De La Haye, his case was he made a YouTube channel. You know, he was making money off of it, as he should. Most of the stuff wasn't him as, you know, he was a kicker. He wasn't really making anything off of the team. He was making it off of himself, you know, his image, his personality, all that stuff. And he was making money, which had really no effect on the team at all. And, you know, he was doing his own thing, making profit for stuff he should make profit for. And, you know, being rewarded for kind of hard work and a good personality and all this stuff that people enjoy. People enjoyed his work. And the NCAA obviously didn't like that because he technically was using his image. He was using himself to make money. And no, with the NCAA, you can't do that. If you're making money, the NCAA can't have that. No, we want you poor, basically. The NCAA doesn't like it when kids decide to, you know, be active members of society, basically, and be in a capitalist society. They don't like that. They like to have control. They like to have control. So when it's stripped away and someone is, you know, doing that, they don't love it. For instance, the Reggie Bush stuff. Reggie Bush got like $200,000 or something after he won the Heisman, or during recruiting, something like that. He was one of the top prospects in the country. He got paid. Boo-hoo, big deal. Everybody does. Every recruit gets illegally paid coming out if you're big. That's just a fact. And some of them get caught. All of them do it. I can guarantee you, like, half of Alabama got paid coming into school by someone. You know, there's been big documentaries and stuff on the SEC and how, and like Mississippi State and Ole Miss, and they paid all their players, and that came out, and it's, everybody acts so surprised, like, oh no, oh, this big college program paid their players illegally coming into the year. It's like, of course they did. That's recruiting. You take kids who don't have a ton, and you pay them already illegally. The NCAA only cares about it somewhat. But a player making money fairly by, you know, making money off of themselves, off of their image, that's bad. But we're going to allow colleges to illegally pay players like Zion Williamson and, you know, Memphis. That whole thing with James Wiseman that we called out, you know, everybody was like, I remember that video so clearly. We put out that video and everybody in the comments were like, oh no, Memphis. They're so kind, so nice. Penny Hardaway never would pay his players. Oh, well, James Wiseman, he got suspended because he got paid. He got benefits. Everybody gets paid. Every big recruit gets benefits. I just don't understand how some people can be so numb to it, because it comes out all the time. Reggie Bush should still have his Heisman. Yeah, They shouldn't have ripped his Heisman. If you're going to rip his Heisman, rip every major recruit's Heisman that's ever won it. Ever won it. Because I guarantee you, they probably got paid. I'm sure that there's a, let's mark the date there, like 1980 and up or something like that. Because, you know, modernly, probably, you know, someone in the 50s probably didn't get paid. Who knows? Maybe they did. But I'm talking about more of the modern era. You know, let's keep it 80s. Yeah, 1980s and up. I guarantee you, almost all of them have probably got paid. Johnny Manziel wasn't as high of a recruit coming out, so probably didn't get paid. And, you know, he was a huge, huge in college. He wanted to capitalize off of his image. And he's not wrong for that, but he couldn't do it technically through the name, imaging, and licensing thing. He did it, and he got in trouble with the autographs. He got like $30,000 for a bunch of autographs. You know, there's guys like Manziel that right now, if they came in right now with it legal, would be crazy rich. Crazy. They could make a ton of money. And we already are seeing some people make that money. A basketball player from Tennessee State got a $2 million deal with some computer company. Already, the biggest NIL deal yet. Derek King. Mon Richards has this agency thing that he's already doing. They're, Miami's getting inked to $20,000 deals pretty much each. Bang deals. Barstool is giving out sponsorships left and right. We're about to see what they're going to do with that. I mean, all these guys are starting to get paid now, and I think it's a great thing because really it's just bringing security to the athlete. We've seen athletes like Greg Oden who come out of college and they get super banged up, and then, you know, they lose some money and they have to go back to school, and it's tough to go back to school because now you lost all your money and you don't have extra money that you like got in school to come back. And all that, especially it's seen with basketball players because they're all one and dones, and it really doesn't make sense that if they're going to school, if they're just gonna go there for 1 year, probably not even attend classes, and then leave. So when you're allowing them to make money in college, not only are you allowing them to do fun things like a YouTube channel and make money that way, but you're also giving them kind of the right to get endorsements earlier, like the G League Ignite guys, and have money in their pocket so that if their career fails, if they have a major injury, this applying to all sports, you don't have that kind of sad story anymore that they had this injury and they're not going to be able to play again. Their contract wasn't guaranteed. They're not getting anything. They don't have enough money. They don't have a degree. They can't go back to school and they end up out on the streets or something. You're not going to have that anymore because now that top player who tears his ACL or something in his first NFL season and isn't ever able to play again now has $4 million in his back pocket because he was great in college, right? So not only he left his third year, oh no, right? He has those $4 million now so he can go back to school, get his degree, and he still has $4 million. Still has $4 million. So he's set up pretty much for a good chunk of his life if he spends well. And will have his degree and can go make more. So, you know, it's people use the argument that this money and this stuff is going to take away from their education. There. I think yes. I think it could, certainly. But at the same time, I think It might take away their education at the time, their focus on it, but it's going to give them the ability to focus on their education later if they ever screw up, you know, because they're going to have extra money to go get it when they're actually going to care and not be focused, hyper-focused on a sport. And it's just not screwing over the kids in college anymore, which I think is good. And you know, the NIL is going to do really well for not only the college kids, but the fans as well, because now you're going to get licensed jerseys and all that and licensed endorsements, and NCAA is finally going to come back. We know that. So they're going to be able to use name and likenesses. I mean, there's just so many players that could have benefited from this. Joe Burrow could have had like $10 million coming out of college, knowing how big he was. Johnny Manziel would have been super big. Countless names, Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston, any of those Heismans, you know, they could have been huge. Baker Mayfield, especially with what he was doing in college, all that stuff. Yeah, how imagine how big that would be with sponsorships and all that. So with, you know, I don't really ever want direct, I never want direct pay to players from colleges. Like it's like a job or something. That's not right because, you know, it's college. You're going there for an education and all that. But if a player can make money on their own, no use of the school, just their image and likeness like this is, that's perfect. Because you could do that with any of your jobs. If you're really good at something like entertainment and you do a YouTube channel or something and you're making a ton of money off of that, that has nothing to do with the job that you already have or if you're in school. Like if you're a student and you're doing something on the side and you're, I don't know, you Twitch stream or something, right? And you get a lot of money off of that. The university is not going to restrict your right to be doing that because, you know, it's your freedom to do that. It's just when the word athlete gets thrown into it, they didn't really like that for some reason and they restricted your ability to. So now really they're just taking student athletes and they're putting them in with any normal citizen and any normal student really and giving them that freedom. So overall, it's going to be really good for the student athlete and really, really good for the NCAA. They're finally starting to give in a little bit to what the world wants, and overwhelmingly, and overall, what's fair for these student athletes. And I think that's a really good thing. So now with that over with, let's get into the NBA. The Suns, they beat the Clippers in six games. Game six, Jay Crowder dropped 19 points. Ayton dropped 16 points and 17 rebounds. He's showing out, really having a coming out party. Chris Paul had a legacy game, as pardon my take would say. 41 points and 8 assists. Just a great game from CP3 after having this series where he had the COVID thing going on and all that. And overall, this playoffs really hasn't been like scoring like a ton. CP3 really went off here and really just showing that he's still that superstar. 41 and 8, really good from him. Devin Booker wasn't needed as much because of the CP3 stuff, but Booker put up 22 points. Paul George on the other side, he had 21 points and 9 rebounds. Pretty good performances there. From D-Book, CP3, DeAndre Ayton's just been insane. This series has been really good. Jay Crowder has been a great supporting cast. Cameron Payne, as much jokes and in good faith, jokes in good faith towards campaign. He's actually been pretty good this series. Mikal Bridges has been great for the Suns. You know, even with Kawhi, I still believe the Suns would probably win this series. The Suns have just been great, and I think they're on a mission right now. After the game, Patrick Beverley pushed CP3, he's going to get suspended now for the start of next season. It was kind of wrong. You know, CP3 got back up though. He's fine. The Eastern Conference Finals, Trae Young, he had 48 points in game one, was really showing out. And then Trae obviously got injured, but the Hawks still won game four, tying the series up. And Lou Williams had 21 points and 8 assists in that one. Pretty insane performance there for him. But ultimately, I was kind of sad about this. I wanted a Hawks-Suns finals because, I mean, that would just be crazy. No one expected the Hawks to really get this far, to be honest, at all. But they did. Unfortunately, they didn't. In game five, Brooke Lopez put up 33 points. Went God mode out there. Kind of looking like I don't know, Nets, Brook Lopez, when he was the leader of that team, even better. I mean, dude was all over the court. And the Hawks really just didn't have an answer for a Giannis-less Bucks team. Giannis went, if anybody saw that video of the Giannis injury, that was ugly. That was really, really ugly. Me and Alejandro watched that one together, and that one was bad. That one was really bad injury. And dude's a superhuman for how he's even going to come back from that. I don't know, but I guess Giannis is. We'll see with that. Hopefully he does come back for this NBA Finals. Without him, it would kind of feel wrong seeing the Suns against Chris Middleton. It felt wrong watching Chris Middleton and John Collins be the top players for the end part of the series, but it is what it is. The Bucks beat the Hawks in six games, so they won game six. They won game six, 118-107. Drew Holiday had a good game, 27-9-9. Chris Middleton had 32-7-4. Everybody off the bench did pretty well. Jeff Teague, who, man, I hate Jeff Teague because I'm a Celtics fan, and he sucks so bad, but now he's doing all right off the bench, 11 points in 12 minutes for him. Pat Connaughton had 13 points and 8 rebounds off the bench as well. Bobby Portis with 12-9. And P.J. Tucker was just kind of all over there, 5 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists. So some good stuff there from the Bucks team. Trae Young was not very good. He only had 14 points and 9 assists. You know, almost a double-double there, but from Trae, you expect a little bit more scoring, and we really just didn't get that from him in this game. Kevin Huerta, only 5 points. Where the supporting cast used to step up for the Hawks, they didn't step up tonight. Well, not tonight, but in game six. And that was kind of their downfall. Now we have Suns-Bucks finals, and honestly, I think the Suns are going to take this one. I just love this Suns team so much. These guys down the board can do so much. Jay Crowder is a great role player, along with Bridges, and Torrey Craig's good, and Cameron Payne. Dario Saric has been a great player for them. And then obviously got the stars, Chris Paul, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton have been absolutely great for them. I also think the Bucks are going to play pretty well too, because, I mean, they got Brook Lopez, Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton, who have been really good starters. Giannis coming back will be good. I mean, both teams have really good depth. I just think that the Suns' depth is going to outweigh them. I also think that the Suns have played a little bit better. Played better competition. I think winning over the Clippers in six is more impressive than winning over the Hawks in six. You know, I still think the West is just stronger than the East. And the Suns just, they're so much determination. Chris Paul, you know, he's older now. He's like 36. So Chris Paul being that old and having these young guys around him, I think Chris just has that drive. You know, he's here for the first time. Everybody's there pretty much for the first time. I think actually, yeah, everybody is. I'm pretty sure. Besides for Jay Crowder. Jay Crowder's the only one there because he was there last year. But the NBA Finals, I think Chris Paul's on a mission. I don't think anybody's going to get in front of him for that. And I think the Suns, you know, outside shooting and all that, They have guys in the paint to match up with Giannis when he comes in there, and Brook Lopez with Ayton. I think Ayton's going to do well in there. And then the guards are great. I mean, Booker's going to do his thing. We've seen his potential scoring 70 points before and, you know, being a great partner to Chris Paul here. And Paul, we just saw his legacy game so far. 41 points. We can see he has an explosion waiting, and you know, he's gonna be really good here, and I do think the Suns are gonna win. My pick's Suns in six. The other guys will get their picks in next podcast, hopefully, but that's what we have there. Now on to the draft lottery. The Pistons landed the top pick. They're expected to take Cade Cunningham, who is the clear-cut number one pick. If they go otherwise, I don't know what they're doing. The Warriors also, they landed the 7th and the 14th pick. And there was reports that the Warriors are expected to package the 7th pick in James Wiseman, who had a good rookie season and was injured a little bit, but had a great rookie season. You know, we loved him coming out of college. We loved him in college, despite, you know, accusing him of getting paid, which he was. But I don't hold that against players. I just know that they were, you know, I don't really care if you get paid by the college. I could care less, but, you know, this, it just happened to him. No hard feelings, James. We love you. James Wiseman, in the 7th pick, they're expected to package him in a trade for some superstar. And there's not really a lot on the, you know, on the market right now. Damian Lillard comes to mind. He is there. Kawhi Leonard's going to be a free agent, so that doesn't really matter. But, you know, Lillard's out there, and there's nothing really much else. Maybe a De'Aaron Fox or someone on a struggling team. But again, those guys are point guards, so really doesn't make a lot of sense for them to be doing anything and coming over to the Warriors, but who knows. But one name that did come up was Pascal Siakam. Makes sense for them. They need a big forward, power forward, or center type, especially if they're going to ship off Wiseman. But, you know, the 7th pick and the 14th pick, I think, are a good package. I think they need to match salaries. That might be, but even then, Wiseman's on a rookie salary, so doesn't make a ton of sense. I just think a 7th pick and James Wiseman, who was the number 2 pick last year, is a lot for Pascal Siakam. And Siakam's good, but, you know, he played on a pretty good Raptors team this year and couldn't really get much done. He played in 56 games this year, averaging 21 points, 7 rebounds a game, and 1 steal a game, not a block a game. You know, on the defensive end, Swaggy P, he's not amazing, and his interior moves are all right. He shot 45%, which was pretty good, but only shot 29.7% from 3, a 5% decline from the previous 2 seasons. So he hasn't been playing amazing as of late. He's been all right. And certainly I think that he could be an upgrade down there for them, but I just think they're giving a lot for them. And I believe in James Wiseman. I think this guy can develop into an all-star, especially if he can keep developing his outside shot. But giving up the 7th pick and James Wiseman to go get Pascal Siakam, I still don't think you're going to get past some of these guys in the West, like the Suns, the Clippers if they retain Kawhi. The Lakers, I think, are on the out, so they're really not there. The Jazz, if they keep getting better. I really don't think you're going to get anywhere doing that. If you can find a better superstar, go for it, but Siakam's certainly not the answer. If I was the Warriors, I'd still stay the path. I mean, 7-14 can probably get you something, but stick with Wiseman, please. Because the dude's going to do, he's going to be good. James Wiseman's going to be a good player. He's a perfect center for your team. Just keep him there. Please keep him there, Warriors. Please. You don't even know what he's going to be like with Klay Thompson, because, you know, he hasn't played with him yet. And Klay's going to be coming back. So why not just look at that? If you want to send 7-14 somewhere, go for it. But leave Wiseman out of the package. Please just do that. And, you know, maybe you'll be all right. Some hirings that happened. Celtics hired former Nets assistant Ime Udoka as their new head coach, which I thought was a great hire. You know, coming from the Popovich coaching tree, preaches a lot of defense and leadership, which is kind of weird coming from, you know, I was concerned coming from the Nets coaching staff that maybe he was just kind of free-flowing, like, let the players take control, and was really just didn't really care a lot about toughness and grittiness and all that stuff. But it seems like he does. He said he's gonna push these guys really hard. Cares about defense and effort, which is good. What I want for them, a head coach of the Celtics. And you know, Popovich coaching tree couldn't get much better from that. You know, that's kind of what comforts me about him, is that he's coming from Popovich. Popovich, great coach, and he's not just coming from the Nets coaching staff. He's more so from that. People are going to say, you know, he's more Nets, but I think he's more Popovich, which is good. Mavericks also hired Jason Kidd, which I don't understand much. You know, the past, the Mavs are kind of in a bad spot, as we know, in their front office, and now hiring Jason Kidd, who's controversial and wasn't really an amazing coach. Kind of surprising, but we'll see what happens there, I guess. We're going to take a really quick break and be back with a little bit more NBA and to the MLB. And we're back with some more NBA. So Kawhi Leonard has, as we know, has been out for the Western Conference Finals. And now after the Clippers losing, there's been some rumors coming out that Kawhi Leonard might be opting out of this player contract, which he can do this year, and entering the free agency pool and signing with possibly the Dallas Mavericks or the Miami Heat. Now, as a player, you know, Kawhi loves LA, and it's a good team. It still could win, but after two seasons of it, on paper, looking like one of the best rosters in the league, it's fallen apart and hasn't been able to contend, and now we have the Suns and all that, and, you know, it doesn't look good for them. So Kawhi could be possibly going to the Dallas Mavericks. Now, the Mavericks just hired Jason Kidd as their head coach. The players in the league, Damian Lillard, I'll use as an example, wanted him as head coach for some reason. For some reason, people like this guy as a head coach, and I don't know if Kawhi is one of them, but I'm assuming he could be. So, Kidd being a turnoff for me might not be for him, but we'll see there. Kawhi, there's a lot of bad stuff happening in the front office for the Dallas Mavericks. There's a lot of confusion. Rick Carlisle left because of it. Luka Doncic is reportedly having doubts of if he wants to stay in Dallas and all that stuff. So they're in a lot of turmoil right now. On paper, Kawhi going and teaming up with Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis would be amazing. I think they could be one of the best teams in the West. But Kawhi having to subject himself to kind of that turmoil in that franchise, I don't think he really wants to do that, especially after kind of being with the Clippers, which right now isn't in the best state either. So I don't think he's really willing to go do that to himself. The other team's the Miami Heat. Also, the Mavs have the cap space to do this. They could. They really just would have to trade some minor pieces and they'd be good. The Heat, on the other hand, would have to trade some major pieces. Victor Oladipo's on a big contract there. They'd have to get rid of him. I believe he's in free agency, so they just let him walk. But they'd also have to trade some more pieces. Tyler Hero would probably have to go in this. I think it would make sense for Miami, who, with Jimmy Butler, kind of want to win now, with also Bam Adebayo being there. I think with the East still being kind of weak, as I said earlier, Kawhi Leonard, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo would be absolutely insane and would be great for the East. I think they could beat the Bucks. The Nets would be a little bit of trouble. I think even then, still, you know, if the Nets come out next season and don't get off to the best start, you know, their egos are going to get in there. The egos will get in Nets' heads and they could fall apart. So the East could be easily exploitable. I think could be a little easier for Kawhi. You know, we've already seen that with Kawhi, with the Raptors winning in the East. Now he's going to join the Heat possibly, and that could be, you know, even bigger grab. And I think Pat Riley, you know, he's a smart guy. If I were him, I would go ahead and naturally do this with the Heat if Kawhi wants to come. So we'll see there, but I think that could be a big move. I actually think we've talked about Kawhi and the Heat. They've been leaked, They've been linked before. So, you know, I think it's a good match. Kawhi and Jimmy Butler are good friends, so that could really work out for them. And I just think it's kind of a perfect match if you can get salaries to match up with that. So we'll see. Now on to our last subject, which is the MLB. And basically, Spider-Tack is the story for the MLB this week. Max Scherzer and Sergio Romo, they were the notable checks. Now with people, the MLB starting to come out on sticky stuff and Spider-Tack, which speeds up your spin rate, makes you a better pitcher. I've been a vocal in saying that everybody in the MLB cheats, kind of like the NCAA thing. Everybody in the NCAA pays their top players, and that's just fact. It's a fact in the MLB that everybody in the MLB cheats. That's pretty much a fact. The Astros cheated. The Yankees have cheated in the same way that the Astros have. The Red Sox have done it. Pretty much every team steals signs. Every team uses illegal substances. Every team used steroids back in the day. They still do to some extent. You know, every team in the MLB cheats, and that's why I don't really care. That's why I didn't care when the Astros thing happened. Everybody, you know, hated the Astros when they found out they cheated and called their World Series illegitimate and all this stuff. I really don't care. I still think their World Series is legitimate. You know, people will hate me for that, but I do, not because I'm a Astros fan, but because I didn't care that they cheated, because I think, honestly, that the team across from them probably cheated just as bad as they did. I think that everybody's cheating in the MLB, and if you're not cheating good enough to win, then you're not playing well enough, because everybody is. The MLB is just a cheating league. It's just how it is. And until the MLB actually wants to clean it up fully and do like a full job on it, then they're not going to get it. And that's kind of what's happening with the Spider-Tack thing. Hopefully they're going full out with this, but I don't think they really are. Well, they kind of are, because now they're initiating it. And it's kind of funny. Max Scherzer and Sergio Romo did the thing where they got really pissed off at the checks and started to pull down their pants and stuff, which was funny. But now pitchers are getting sticky stuff checks for this. Scherzer and a lot of pitchers have kind of declined. Some of them have declined, some of them not as drastically, but the two biggest were both from the New York Yankees. Me as a Red Sox fan, this is fun. Gerrit Cole and Aroldis Chapman, both of their stats, their pitching stats have declined since the sticky stuff rule and checks have been in place. So apparently they've started to stop using this stuff. It's really impacted them. Gerrit Cole was the one with the leaked text with the Angels equipment manager that was showing him really just asking for all this Spider-Tack, which has helped him increase his spin rate. Trevor Bauer has been another guy who his spin rate increased drastically in the past couple years. So, you know, this has been going on for the past few years, and pitchers have gotten really used to it. And some of their excuses for using it, like trying not to kill people, it's like if you're going to throw at someone's head because you don't have Spider-Tack, then learn how to pitch. Like, come on. But Gerrit Cole really impacted by this. Since June 3rd, which is pretty much when Cole, we presume, stopped using Spider-Tack, Cole has allowed 20 earned runs and 10 home runs over 34.1 innings pitched. These stats are coming from Daily News. He has walked 11 batters and struck out 38. His ERA over this span has been 5.24, which is atrocious for an ace pitcher. From May 28th to Sunday, Cole's overall ERA rose over a run per game to 2.91. So he has not been doing well at all. Previous to that, he was pitching great, just like himself, and overall has been pretty well before that, but now really, really bad. Since pretty much that same exact time span, Chapman has allowed 14 earned runs and 5 home runs in his last 9 appearances. He has 4 blown saves, and opponents are hitting 483 against Aroldis Chapman, the guy who's known for pitching super fast, great closing pitcher, one of the best in the game, has been very weak. So, you know, not good at all, really, for the Yankees. Their blatant use of spider attack here. Blatant use. And, you know, usually I wouldn't care. But if the MLB is actually going to crack down on this, you know, good. That's good. I'm not going to attack these guys, though, for using spider attack, because at least not in the past. Now, maybe. Like, if they're using it now. But, like I said, all of them used it. I really don't care that they did. Just hopefully a little bit strict about this stuff and tries to get the cheating out of the game just a little bit. Like, tries a little bit. They usually don't. Spider attack will probably come back next year. No one will care. But, you know, is what it is here. It's just funny to see that some of these guys are now sliding. They're not pitching up to their contracts. And we'll see how it turns out and see how bad this can really get with the Yankees. Yankees are in a bad state right now. They're 500 in a good division. You know, Sox are great. The Rays are great. And the Blue Jays are all good. So not good for them. Orioles are the only really bad team in that division. Like usual, but that was another story. So yeah, that's going to be it for Sports Report Podcast episode 38. Thank you guys so much for listening. Go to our YouTube Sports Report Podcast. Over there on YouTube, you get short clips of this podcast and any other podcast, along with highlight videos and all that good stuff. Follow us on Twitter at SportsReportPo1. You can follow me at BillySRP on Twitter. Follow us on Instagram at Sports Report Podcast. Yeah, thank you guys so much for listening. We couldn't do this without you, and just thank you for everything. See you.